I believe this is none of the terms of that. I just did one person to check the beer license for the first time. 7374, we're all going to apply for a permit. I believe we returned to something that I probably mentioned you at one time. Besides the case of one of the most ridiculous things that ever happened in the delivery of the ice, because what it did was it gave a lot of false hope to a lot of people. The minimum number of points that I can't remember, 20 points. All these people that were eligible to apply on their ice case are 4 points. You knew, I knew. I don't know if that judge knew or the court knew that most of the people that applied as a result of this case went up to their committee. All it did was create a lot of first feelings, false hope. And that shouldn't have been enough.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure about it. We got here late. Everybody did that one too, so we missed a lot of this time. So I might be repetitious of what you've been saying, and I would say it anyway. I live in a village, and I know I'm pretty familiar with a lot of the problems that the village people in this area are having. And amongst other problems, probably the most serious is the one that we've just referred to by this gentleman over here. It's the problem that people who did not have gear licenses specifically in the required years of 69 through 72 have been excluded from getting permits. And I discussed this back in 1974 with Joe McGill, and I discussed it in 74 with Al Daziak, Juno, and I discussed it once or twice with you, Nels, and a few other people. And it's a problem that, you know, has been lingering on, and it's going to continue to get worse as time goes on. And the problem is, how do you account for people who have fished a number of years, a large number of years in some examples? The gentleman sitting next to me has fished every year since 1948, but he only had a gear license, I think, in 63, was the only year he had one. And he doesn't have the points to get a permit. Now, I don't think anybody in this room can understand why that's fair, why a person who has a permit or who fished a gear license in 72 and never fished before, but maybe once, can get a permit, and a gentleman who's fished every year of his life, his adult life of 30 years, simply because he didn't have the money or the means to get a permit in the particular 3 or 4 years that it applied to, is excluded. Now, obviously, what's needed is a change in the law. It can't be done by the commission because it is in the law that you had to have a gear license in the specific years to do so. And the problem that you're faced with, obviously, is how do you do it so that you can't have 50,000 people coming in and getting permits? You don't want to just open the door to everybody and their brother-in-law that had permits. And to me, the mechanism to do so is to require fishing as a partner, as a puller, for a relatively long period of time, more than 1 or 2 seasons, perhaps 5 or 7 or 8. But in other words, to account for people who have fished and who are dependent on the thing, you can extend the number of years that you need to have fished as a puller to get a permit. But if you just completely exclude them and throw them out the door, you're going to have people who are truly dependent, perhaps even more dependent than a guy who owns a boat, simply because here's a guy who's fished as a puller for 4 or 5 or 7 years because he hasn't had the money to get together. He's got a wife and 10 kids. He makes $4,000 in 67 or 68 or 69. All that money goes to buying a grub steak for his family. He can't afford to buy a boat. He can't afford to buy a nest. And that doesn't make him any less economically dependent. I think it makes him more economically dependent on the fishery than the guy who's got a boat, who takes off and goes to Anchorage or goes to Seattle, or has a full-time job here as a teacher or a doctor or a lawyer, and can afford to buy a boat, buy a permit, etc., or buy the nets in the appropriate years. And I think that there is a mechanism, a legislative mechanism, to account for these people who I think we've left out. And there's quite a few of them. Quite a few more than people realize. People who are truly dependent and who are out of the door right now, they have no way of getting a permit. They have no way of giving a permit to their kids. I know one guy in New Studio who's got 8 or 9 kids and can't get a permit. His kids can't fish anything but a parker the rest of their life, if they're lucky enough to fish a parker. Basically, the way the system is set up now, as you well know, There's a drift of permits from local people to people who don't live around here. There's a drift of permits from people who don't have much money to people who have a lot of money. Now, right now, the going price, approximately for a Bristol Bay permit, and I don't know what they are on the other areas, probably just as much, if not more, the going price is anywhere from $50,000 on up. And if fishing continues as it's being predicted, it's going to be in the next 2 or 3 years, the going price of those things is going to be anybody's guess, $100,000, $200,000, maybe $500,000. And if it continues to increase as people think it is, perhaps that's what it's going to be. In 10 years, if you want to buy a permit, it's going to cost you $300,000. And who's going to be able to afford one that lives here? Who's going to be able to afford one that lives in Cleveland for a new studio or Echo, or maybe even Juno? Maybe it's going to be a rich man's game. We're going to be protecting this industry for people who are rich, not for people who need it. The obvious problem, the immediate problem, are people who have fished a long time and need those permits, people who are pullers. But you've got the extended problem, basically, of how do you open the door and let people come into this fishery who are dependent on it more than other people. Particularly, we're talking about local people, and we're talking about people who are not necessarily very wealthy, people who don't have any other occupation other than fishing. And how do you open the door to permit those people to get into the fishery? I can think of two ways, and I can address this as a question perhaps you know, by saying, what mechanism, it's in the law, the commission has got the authority to issue additional new permits if they consider the economic viability of the industry to increase. Now, I don't know what work the commission has done yet on this, but I fished here in the Bay this summer, and I know what's happened here in the Bay in the last 2 or 3 years, and generally speaking, Bristol Bay, and probably the other areas of the state as well, have increased the fishing, the viability of fishing has increased tremendously over the last 3 or 4 years from when the act was passed. The price of salmon has doubled, in some places tripled in the last 3 or 4 years. The quantities of fish in most parts of Bristol Bay, and probably in most parts of the state, has increased substantially because of good management and the 200-mile limit, etc. So one mechanism open to the commission, and it has nothing to do with legislature passing any act, is to establish an increased quota of permits, perhaps another 100 or 150 or 200, however many you think are necessary, given the economic conditions of the game. I personally think that 1,000 more permits in the Bay right now wouldn't hurt because of the way fishing was, and has been, and probably will be in the next 2 or 3 years. But let me ask you, what is the commission looking at or are you looking at it all yet, to increase the number of permits in those areas where the long-term viability of the industry has increased? And I think Bristol Bay has for sure.
Jared, there's an initial problem
with that section of the law to solve the problem that you've stated because because of the way it's drafted. What it says is the commission does have authority to issue additional permits where the optimum level, desirable level, changes because of long-term market changes or long-term changes in the number of fish that have come back. But it requires the commission, if they do decide to issue additional permits, to do it in a way that assures that the state receives the fair market value for those permits. Okay, so, and the legislature did not give any guidance in terms of who you issue it to. It just said, make sure you get the money for them. So that section of the statute, while it does give us theoretical authority to issue additional permits to solve some problems, doesn't give the authority to do it in the specific way that would be necessary to solve the problem you're talking about. We'd have to go back to the legislature and say, remove that requirement that we get the fair market value from it, first of all, because we're talking about people who can't afford it. And secondly, then give us some standards for issuing the things. So it ultimately, unfortunately, it goes right back to the legislature's lap in terms of that section of the law.
Perhaps that's a question we should address to the Janice.
Jerry, I think that's a very interesting proposal that you've advanced. I'm not sure how much of it we could do without any changes in the law and how much would take changes and exactly what would happen. But could I ask you a few questions to see if I can clarify my understanding of your idea a little bit, please? Let's say we figure that a guy who worked 5 years as a puller, somehow, and I'm not sure of the details, I'm just trying to think this through, gets treated as if he were a gear license holder. Would you see that we should take those 5 years sort of the same way we have weighted the rest of the point system, you know, toward 1972, to give a guy that kind of credit? Because if he fished from 60 to 65 and then dropped out of the fishery, somehow he doesn't fit in exactly the same way that the guy who fished as a puller from 68 to 67 to 72 does. Is your notion that we would look at something like five continuous years that come up against 72 or weight it that way?
I think I see what you're getting at. Obviously, it makes sense, especially we're talking about people who have fished. We're talking about 1972 and before. We're talking about opening the door to those people who I think should have got permits from 72. It seems to me that you ought to weight it more recent to from 72 than you do from 1942.
Yeah, right.
But you shouldn't necessarily just cut it off from 67 to 72. There might be very good reasons why a person only fished 1 or 2 years from 67 to 72. But yeah, I think you ought to weight it.
Okay, it ought to be weighted somehow closer towards 72. And I'm not sure what sort of magic we'd need in order to say 5 years as a boat puller is good enough to give you gear license points.
I didn't say 5 years.
Or four or six or, you know, I just pick five because it's easier to use one number and think about it. You'd have to figure out what number is reasonable. And, you know, as I say, I'm not sure whether to take legal changes. I'm not sure whether we could get away with it without getting a big court challenge on it. But it is an interesting idea which would attempt to get at some of these people who have been boat pullers for a long period of time and yet might limit still somewhat the number of people who could jump in because they were a puller 1 year sometime and now want to get a permit. And I just wanted to, you know, get clarified how you thought that might be distributed.
Okay, the only criteria we're talking about right here is that with these crewmen, is talking about the number of years they were crewmen. And, you know, in the limited entry point system, we considered the concept of their dependence by trying to look at, you know, not just the one factor of how many years did you fish, but and I'm wondering that if your idea is a good one, that because I potentially see like that this could be a problem that we're just going to have horrendous amounts of people. Just one example, and if this law applies statewide, you know, we can't just write it to apply to Bristol Bay. Maybe we can. Let's say we can't. In Southeast Alaska, the same boat fishery, you have five crewmen for every skipper, and you know, bang, there you got a whole large pool of people. Well, as I'm a gillnetter, I don't usually have a deckhand, and a lot of people don't that are drift net a lot of times. So, it, you know, that could complicate it. So that's why I'm wondering if we wouldn't refine your idea a little bit, add in, you know, kind of the dependence of the crewman on the fishery. And again, that dependence factor may be a legal way of benefiting residents more. Because particularly in Southeast, with our, in a lot of our other same boat fisheries, a lot of the crewmen are not residents. They're college kids or something that come up from south, even though the skippers are resident fishermen. Nobody wants to be a crewman because they can't make any money. So, you know, we don't want to give all those crewmen who are non-residents the advantage over there. So they're not really dependent on it.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with this problem, but I can see what you're getting. And it seems to me the obvious way to write it in to try to correct that error or that problem is to, you have the right to determine your point system differently for different areas. Bristol Bay, you could require or grant so many points for crewman participation as opposed to Southeast and seine fishing. So you could manipulate it partially by how many points you give, or how many, in other words, how many years one is required to be a puller in Bristol Bay as compared to Southeast. You can also manipulate it by altering the number of points required for being rural or as opposed to being urban. So I think that since you have the right, you have the mechanism to change your point systems around for different parts of the state, and you also have the mechanism to give different weights and points for rural versus urban or whatever you want to call it, that you can get around that to some extent. There's going to be the problem, I can see, but you could probably alleviate a lot more. But it still applies to Southeast. I can imagine a guy who's pulled on a boat in Southeast as on the same boat for 15 or 20 years, and he didn't have 200 grand or whatever it required to get on to get the boat. But he wants to now. He's able to now. He thinks he should have gotten it. And I think that guy, in my opinion anyway, is deserving of getting a permit down there, as well as a guy up here. You know, it applies statewide. The problem that I see is the problem that doesn't apply to Sierra Leone, but it applies to anybody. It's fished for a large number of years, but for one reason or another, didn't have the bread and the right fish to get together and get his gear. And, you know, it's going to take, obviously, going to take some kind of rewrite of the law, because the law specifically says you have to have a gear license and those appropriate layers to apply. But from that point on, the commission can play with numbers to determine how to get it so that we try to get the people who we think are really dependent, who have fished a large number of years, as opposed to those fly-by-nights who fish one or two seasons as a college student, just for fun. The other part of it, which we haven't discussed yet, is that the problem of issuing, increasing the number of permits, and we think the optimum number of permits in the bay or the area has increased. Has the commission, or is the commission going to look at ways to doing that? And if so, I think, my opinion is, the proper way to do so is to create a pool of people who are eligible for permits such that the pool consists of people who are dependent on the fishing, okay? Suppose in 1980 now, we're going to issue another 100 permits. Should anybody in the entire country be eligible to get that permit? I think not. I think that the pool of people for whom those permits should be eligible could be people who have shown that they have fished as pullers, or they have worked somehow in the fishery for a minimum of 2 or 3 or 5 years. In other words, people who will be eligible to get additional permits as they're issued should be people who have shown past participation either as a puller or in some way involved in the fishery. Am I making sense?
Oh yeah, you're making sense. I've got a couple different kinds of couple comments and questions. One, as far as issuing additional permits, when the law was put together, it said that before we could figure out that we were going to issue more permits, you had to find a sustained long-term change in the fishery, either in the economics of it or in the number of fish. And right now, you're headed into a good time here in the Bay. You had a year which was a lot bigger than you expected, and if the forecasts run out, you're do for 3 more good ones. And, you know, everybody psychologically is attuned to the good part of what's coming up in the near future. But under the law, we've got to look at what amounts to a sustained long-term change. Red salmon run on a 5-year cycle. We probably ought to look at about 7 rather than just a single 5-year cycle on reds to see what kind of a long-term change there is in the bay. You know, you're going to hit a few years which are bad as well as a few that are good. And I think to be responsible, we have to consider what so many more additional permits are going to mean in a year where the fish are low and everybody's scrambling for them. And I'm also not sure personally exactly where fish prices are going to stabilize. They've been going up, but there are some other things fiddling around in the market that may cause them to drop down a little bit. And again, I don't think we have enough of a long-term thing to get in and make those changes yet. And one of the reasons that was put in there is a protection for the fishery and the fishermen, so that you don't have the commission sort of tinkering around and turning the knobs every couple of years and saying either we ought to issue more permits or we've got too many, we ought to buy back more. You know, it does produce a certain amount of stability, and it requires you to look at the pattern of the resource and the fishery over a longer period of time. It's too soon to decide on additional permits as far as I can tell. Now, in terms of your... Well, very good. In terms of your idea of points for pullers who fish a certain number of years, one of the questions that comes to my mind, maybe you and some of the other people who are far more familiar with the bay can help me out on, is I can see we might have a couple of a proof problem of, you know, just what is a puller? How do you know a guy worked as a puller? Is a puller different than a partner? How do you know when you really had a partnership compared to just some guy who was on the boat? Do you treat a partner who honest to God owned half the boat and all the rest of that but just didn't happen to buy the gear license different than you treat a puller who was a crewman, didn't own the boat, didn't own the gear, but was there and was getting his share for being a helper? You know, those are things that I think we'd have to be a lot clearer on in trying to figure out what we wanted to do and who we were getting at. Because it might be legitimate to treat partners and pullers the same. It might not. You know, and we might have to build something different depending on what goes on in the bay. And when I talk about proof, it's not something just designed to bug the fishermen. We have to have it, among other reasons, to keep the commission honest, because we want to have a trail of evidence out there that says, here's what it was, here's what we looked at, here's why this guy got his permit. And it wasn't just because we liked him, it's because this is what his position was. And, you know, I don't understand enough about the fishery, really, to begin to have a feel yet for how you might draw the details of the kind of system that you're talking about.
When you were asked looking for proof, how do you find out this guy is a partner or a fishing partner or is a boat puller? All they have to do is come to the bay and spend about 6 months and they'll tell you exactly who they're
we don't have to be told from Julie that Chuck was in the apartment for 6 years. Most of us in this room here all know each other. We all fish together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you want proof, come to this area and we'll show you the proof that you need that we're all fishermen. Why are we living here? That's all you need. I mean, it seems to me that when you're looking through your eyes, you don't see us. All you see is the act.
Oh, I see a little bit more than that. Perhaps John can explain better than I can why we need evidence in order to act. Well, let me give you another one. What happens when some of the fleet from Pittsburgh starts asserting that they had all sorts of pullers and partners who were around for 4 or 5 years? I can come here, I can see you guys in the fall, or whatever. There's a whole pattern of people that we have to consider who are going to start to say, I was a partner during these years, if we open up a partnership line, or I was a puller for this number of years. And the real question in my mind is, how the hell do I know you were? You know, maybe you I trust. But him I'm not so sure about. And I want to make sure that I've got something that I can point to out there that says, yeah, he got over the hurdles. This proves it.
The big question comes to mind when you ask that question, where did that person live? Answer the question right there.
I'm afraid somebody might beat us around the head rather severely in the courts if we started just doing it on the basis of that.
I know what you're saying, but in reality, you know, common sense tells you if you're living here, you're bound to go fishing because that's the only economic base you have.
I understand that.
But yet, we keep saying this for years and years and years, and nobody listens to us.
Well, the answer is you go to the legislature, you've got to get an answer.
I mean, that's one of the reasons we're having this meeting today.
Yeah, we'll try to. Okay, Val, go ahead.
I can barely hear you, Val. I'm sorry.
The time that I've been here, I'm hearing a lot of people talk about there should be provisions for crewmen to become eligible to receive permits. I'll take that aside and let's think about one provision in the law that concerns the buyback program, or a possible buyback program, where the ideal number or the optimum number is lower than the number of outstanding permits in the bay. Already in Bristol Bay, I think a lot of other people think that there may be, from talking to the fishing game and from not so much the women under commission, but more so the fishing game, biologically speaking, there may be too many freckles out there now in controlling and managing fishing. So I think maybe what a lot of these people are saying here is that if we're going to have, you know, if we're going to talk about getting crewmen into a fishery where there are too many units now, biologically speaking, as determined by the state, let's throw out limited entry, because that's what's got to be done in order to do it. That's what they're saying. And I'd love to hear a response from the commission as to the optimum number and from the logical part of the fishing game right now, because, you know, how can we have more people coming into the fishery if we have too many people in there now? How else we speak? We gotta address this.
Yeah, but how come we have such an over-escapement condition, I suppose?
Well, I think, Alan, I didn't see the fact that I'm not sure if you could address the optimum number.
Why do we have to have a blanket law for the whole state?
Why do we have to?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how you can...
We got fishing regulations here that just covers this Bristol Bay area. It doesn't cover Southeast, it doesn't cover the Gulf, it doesn't cover up the rest of the coast. You've got regulations just covering the Bristol Bay. Why doesn't we have to have a blank limited entry commission just for the whole state?
Well, you'd have to go back into the reason why...
Do
well, Shep, just let me give you a chance to explain why we have the law in the first place. First of all, the Bristol Bay fishermen, we're complaining about too much gear out in the bay out here, down the Tweejack and the Michigan, okay? And they wanted to know how in the world they could keep the outsiders out or reduce the number or the amount of gear in the bay. You couldn't selectively just say that you could only have so much gear here. You allowed as many people as wanted to come in that, to take a risk to fish as had the guts to do it. In bad years, you had people coming in and they fished anyway. Then the limited entry idea was talked about, and people over here were talking about the limited entry program and what its potential benefits were, and I'm sure a lot of the problems that we're talking about today were even discussed then. But yet, the Bristol Bay fishermen, as far as I know, a large number of them approved of the passage of the limited entry law. That's why the question of why do we have to have a blanket law to cover the entire state is that the fishery doesn't just belong to Bristol Bay, it belongs to the entire state of Alaska. It's a publicly owned resource.
The fisheries here belong to the state of Alaska. Yet you got a 32-foot limit boat in the bay here, but you go someplace else, there's no limit. So why do you have a blanket for the state of Alaska?
Well, I don't know what would happen if we had 50-foot boats out here fishing.
You have a blanket law for the whole state.
Well, I was going to ask a question before I go any further. It's getting a little bit late now, and I did ask Jeff Comfort to make a presentation to us on some of the problems that he's been experiencing. But I'd like to, before we break up or before we adjourn this meeting tonight, I'm going to ask all of you to vote on if you had a choice, would you rather have limited entry or not have limited entry? That's before we leave. Go ahead, Frank. Yes, please. Yeah, after Jeff gets done here, then we'll go into proposals and then we can try to shoot holes in them. I've got two already that are already dead. Val, go ahead, and then I think Alan wants to say something. I think we'll go right to Jeff after that.
Okay. Why would you want to have a vote?
Yeah.
Do you think that this is generally representative of the area?
I beg your pardon?
Why would you have a vote? What effect would this vote?
No, I'm just curious about the people here. I'd just like to know what their feelings are about that. They wouldn't have any effect on me or anything else. I'm curious. I'd like to know what people are thinking about.
I imagine there's more people here that are against it, of course. Just take a while here. If I didn't have a permit, I think I just wanted a permit.
We're not against limited entry. We're against the limited entry law as written now.
Val asked a question about optimum numbers and about buyback.
We've got three different things to look at in figuring out what an optimum number is, and they're all kind of complicated. Fish and Game Management has got to come up essentially with a number of boats that can take any size run, either a run in a good year or a run in a bad year, without making any serious risk of danger to the resource. Those are sort of their outside limits. What's the minimum number of boats that can take the biggest anticipated run you're coming with, and what's the maximum number that you can take before you're really taking chances about whether you're going to get your escapement? And they've got to come up with a number like that. Another number that we're doing most of the work on, you got some survey questionnaires in the mail this summer on it, is an economic one. How much money should a guy make fishing? What is a reasonable average rate of return considering his investment and the amount of time he fishes? We've got to come up with a number of boats that's going to produce that. That one's tough because prices and costs have been changing very rapidly the past couple of years. Price of fish goes up, but the price of gas goes up. It's moving around. But we've got to try and get a handle on that. There's a third piece that we've got to look at, which says the number of permits necessary to avoid serious economic dislocation to those currently engaged in the fishery. I'm not even sure I know what the hell that means. But we've got to look at that too. Fish and Game has done some internal preliminary work on some numbers. It has not been reviewed up through the chain of command. We are working on the economic stuff based on the surveys that went out. We will be coming back into the communities here later to run it by the fishermen and say, hey, here's what, according to the answers we got, it costs you guys to fish and what kind of money you're making. But what do you think? Is there something screwy with our survey? How should we improve it? And we're trying to get at these numbers. So I can't give you a hard number of X, and that's how many boats there ought to be out there. I will give you my own personal impression, and this is just Al. This is not the commission. My impression is you will have a buyback program in Bristol Bay, that the conclusion will be that there are too many boats out there. How many too many? I don't
know. I imagine that are against this report. This is a wild guess. If I didn't have a permit, I think I just wanted a permit. I damn well vote no. Mm-hmm.
We're not against limited entry. We're against the limited entry law as written now.
Val asked a question about optimum numbers and about buyback.
We've got three different things to look at in figuring out what an optimum number is, and they're all kind of complicated. Fish and Game Management has got to come up essentially with a number of boats that can take any size run, either a run in a good year or a run in a bad year, without making any serious risk of danger to the resource. Those are sort of their outside limits. what's the minimum number of boats that can take the biggest anticipated run you're coming with, and what's the maximum number that you can take before you're really taking chances about whether you're going to get your escapement. And they've got to come up with a number like that. Another number that we're doing most of the work on, you got some survey questionnaires in the mail this summer on it, is an economic one. How much money should a guy make fishing? What is a reasonable average rate of return considering his investment and the amount of time he fishes? We've got to come up with a number of boats that's going to produce that. That one's tough because prices and costs have been changing very rapidly the past couple of years. Price of fish goes up, but the price of gas goes up. It's moving around. But we've got to try and get a handle on that. There's a third piece that we've got to look at, which says the number of permits necessary to avoid serious economic dislocation to those currently engaged in the fishery. I'm not even sure I know what the hell that means. But we've got to look at that, too. Fish and Game has done some internal preliminary work on some numbers. It has not been reviewed up through the chain of command. We are working on the economic stuff based on the surveys that went out. We will be coming back into the communities here later to run it by the fishermen and say, hey, here's what, according to the answers we got, it costs you guys to fish and what kind of money you're making, but what do you think? Is there something screwy with our survey? How should we improve it? And we're trying to get at these numbers. So I can't give you a hard number of X, and that's how many boats there ought to be out there. I will give you my own personal impression, and this is just Al. This is not the commission. My impression is you will have a buyback program in Bristol Bay, that the conclusion will be that there are too many boats out there. How many too many? I don't know. So to carry it one step further, the more you open this thing up and let more people in, one way or another, the bigger the buyback program is going to be, the longer it's going to run in order to get down to where that number ought to be. That's just a personal impression, but rather than just leave you with a bunch of mush about what we have to look at, I can get about that specific as far as my own personal sense of how things are going to go.
I'll make one short comment. Please don't send us information in the summertime. We're all gone from the villages.
Right. All right.
Okay. I think, Jeff, why don't you go ahead with your presentation as well.
I think that most of the problems have already surfaced, which I was going to discuss. And I think I want to limit my discussion to two central problems which I've run into over the past couple of years. The first problem is the lack of understanding that the people had in 1974 and 1975 about the limited entry system and how it worked. During the years 73 and 74, when the Entry Commission was developing this permit system and developing their point system, I think it's important to point out that they only traveled to one village in Bristol Bay, and that was Togia. So essentially, none of the people in the upriver villages or on the chain or up around Mount Dalton had any input into the point system, and they also did not have the permit system explained to them. In 1975 or late 1974, when the Entry Commission sent out applications to these people, a 41-page instruction booklet accompanied that application. The application booklet was complex, and for most village people was incomprehensible. They couldn't understand it. Now, I think a lack of understanding is one of the reasons why we're now in court attempting to get about 100 people, attempting to get the commission to accept about 100 applications which were not filed timely by Bristol Bay residents during the 1975 application period. Had the program been explained to the people, had the people been aware of the nature of permits, the transferability of permits, the whole thing, we wouldn't be in court now. You would have all those people signed up, and probably a lot of them with permits.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question, Mr. Goldman?
Sure.
On this, okay, these 100 people who you think were, they just didn't apply because they didn't understand the system.
That's part of it, yeah.
Okay. do you see that there's anything that we could do legislatively rather than going through the court system about these people without reopening the whole system to 5,000 more applications? And, you know, I mean, you're attempting to do it for these 100 people. You're not attempting to open it up for more non-residents or more whoever. I mean, that's
what we're saying in the lawsuit is that if a person was eligible to apply the first time around, he should have had the opportunity to apply.
Okay.
If he didn't understand it, it shouldn't be used against him.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm saying. Is there something
any way to restrict it to the 100 people we know?
Well, is there something that we could do legislatively to allow these people to apply?
I think if we lose the lawsuit, we'll be coming to see you guys.
Well, what I'm saying is maybe you ought to come see us now. Okay.
That's exactly what Jeff's talking about. The commission at the time, BDNA, asked for some contracts to go out and fill out these applications. Okay, after looking back at the system that was given to us, you probably understand how to repair an engine. You need tools, the right tools, right? You need piston wrenches and you name it, whatnot. Okay, what happened is the commission itself gave the screwdriver to disconnect that engine. The tool wasn't right. Now the commission says, oh, we did a good job, we're not going to give you $20,000 basically to cover the whole geographic area, which is Bristol Bay. Now, I know for a fact, the five villages, if you really want to do a good job, half of that have been used just on the five. What about the other 24? So that's what I'm saying. The tool wasn't used right. Whether that was planned or wasn't looked into, that bothers me. And the thing Jeff is trying to say is that the lack of understanding or the knowledge of that act, time-wise, money-wise, they gave us the wrong tool.
I think that's the legislature's responsibility to not provide enough money. It's not the commission's fault.
I understand, but, you know, the way we understood it was coming from our commission.
Okay, my question to Jeff was asking whether there's something the legislature could do for these 100 people who he feels, or they feel, obviously, that they should have been able to apply, and the only reason they haven't applied is because of their lack of understanding. So I'm asking if there's something the legislature could do about it. And
yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know if they could. Go ahead.
Terry, don't just talk about the 100. There's above and beyond the 100. When we start putting a proposal, maybe we understand what we're talking about here. We'll start putting a proposal, maybe we understand the things that we're putting into it. Just don't talk about the 100.
Let's continue with Jeff.
Yeah, as far as the lawsuit goes, we can't, ethically, we can't sell the rest of the state out. We've got to go for the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I just meant this class of people.
Yeah. I think there's more than 100. You dug up on
116 have named so far.
116.
You know, the real problem, Terry, is that it's just not a named class. It's a class action lawsuit brought on behalf of a lot of people who aren't named and, you know, who can't be named because they're just not known yet that they're out there. So, who knows? And Jeff may have some ideas on how many people, but that's the problem with telling you, you know, what whether you can do something for the named people because you can't. I think that legislation would be struck down if you're going to pass legislation for 116 people.
Well, no, obviously it'd have to be based on something that they didn't understand or whatever it was. I mean, obviously we weren't going to write their 100 names in the statute, but.
Okay, let me continue. I think, you know, people have come a long way in understanding limited entry out here in the last couple of years. I still think that there's a problem, and I think an education program should be started and should be carried into the villages. And I think there's a mechanism right here in the Bay with the Bristol Bay Native Association and our office. And like 2 months ago, one guy sold the only permit he had in his family, and he had 7 or 8 kids. And he sold it under the assumption that he thought his kid could get a permit, and there's no chance, there's no way that the guy could get a permit for the kid. So I think that's basically, you know, a lack of understanding of the system. And I think it's needed in the education system. All right, let's get on to the next thing I want to talk about, which is the problem which has been discussed over and over again here, the problem of the high value of permits, and the problem of the young fishermen. A lot of the young fishermen who fished as helpers 10 to 15 years are not qualifying under the point system developed by the Entry Commission. They're coming up 3 or 4 points short. The solution hopefully can be gotten through either a change in the point system or starting over, or we've got a few lawsuits which do challenge the point system. One lawsuit which we've got going, it is a lawsuit which challenges the commission's giving income dependence points to gear license holders in 1971 and 1972. So a person who held a gear license and made a certain percentage of his income those years from fishing could get up to as much as 10 points. The points don't apply to the crew members. Even if the crew member got the same percentage of his income from fishing, he would get no points because he did not have the gear license. That's been challenged, and if the court agrees with us, those points might be available or will be available to crewmen, and hopefully we can get a few more people in. But I think essentially you've got the problem of we might get a few people in this lawsuit and we might get a few people in this lawsuit, but the problem is that when you have a system as it is now, which gives permits, free permits to some people who qualify or who have 17 points, and who cuts off the others who have 16 points, and says, you people with 16 points, you have to now buy in or get one transferred to you. And if in that family the father has a permit and gives it to one of his sons, what are the other sons going to do? They have no way to get a permit unless they buy in. The advantages of the present system of allowing free transferability of permits is the thing about giving permits between family members. I think that's the greatest advantage. The greatest disadvantage is that the permit prices are rising so high that no one out here can afford them. At least no one in the villages can afford them. And I don't think there's any end in sight as far as the value of the permits going up. You got 2 or 3 years of good fishing. You got the two or three years of good fishing coming up, and you also have a buyback program which will probably be initiated in the Bristol Bay area. The buyback program, the values of the permits are going to stay up because you're going to have a scarcity of permits. The figures I get is they're talking about something like 1,350 units a gear as an optimum number, which would mean they'd have to buy back almost 350 or 400 units of gear. So you've got problems. And the people who are going to fund that buyback are the fishermen who have the permits. And the way it's funded is an assessment of up to 7% is made on the permit holder's gross fishing income each year to pay for the buyback of all those permits. The state's got a loan program which they say I guess it is some type of solution to the problem of people and the young fishermen out here who are unable to buy permits. The loan program will enable a fisherman to get up to 75%, get a loan of up to 75%. Well, first it'll let him get a loan and use as collateral a permit. But it'll only allow him to get 75% of the appraised value of the permit. So if he gets a permit for $30,000, the loan can only be made for $22,500, and he's got to come up with some type of loan from another agency, which means collateral, or he's got to come up with $7,500 in cash to buy them, or to get the loan in the first place. I don't think the loan the loan program is a solution to the problem. I think it avoids the problem, and I think it's unfair to the person who has 16 points and has to compete with a man in the lower 48 on the same level. His hardship at 16 points is not recognized, and he's got to compete with the lower 48 guy who can afford to buy a permit also. I think the permit system as it works now, and the fact that the young people are going to have to buy into the fishery, and the fact that the people out here can't afford it and probably can't come up with some type of collateral to get these type of loans, I think this discriminates against the poor people in favor of the rich people. And I don't think it really coincides with the purpose of the Act, and that's to give permits to those people who are most dependent on fishing. I think another problem, if the present system of allowing permits to be sold, if that stays in, I think a problem is you're going to have a lot of permits, and I think you see it now, a lot of permits sold by native people to non-native people outside. I think if you look at the British Columbia system, which is somewhat similar to the system we have here, at the initiation of their program in 1968, 15% of the permit holders were native fishermen. 7 years later, 8% were native fishermen. So 7% in 7 years, the native fishermen sold out. So I think you're going to have to change the system. And I would like to see a system where permits have no value. I'd like to see a system which says you can fish this permit as long as you'd like, but once you quit fishing, you retire this permit to the commission, and the commission in turn reissues to that person who's most dependent. This calls for some kind of continuing point system for 73 and 74 and 75 and every year up. And it'd probably be some kind of administrative burden on the commission, but I think that this type of solution to the problem should be looked at. As far as being, you know, being any legal problems, I doubt whether there would be any legal problems, because all people would be treated similarly, and because those people who would be reissued permits would be those people most dependent on fishing, and that's the purpose of the Act, to give permits most dependent to the people most dependent on fishing. One problem with this thing, and the problem is that you might not be able to retain the provision of transferring permits between family members. And if you can't retain that provision, then it might not be usable. I would suggest, you know, if we can't come up with any good solutions, you know, today in enacting and in Iliamna, is to have the legislature set up some type of objective committee or standing committee, and do a study on alternative forms of transferring permits and solutions to the problems that now exist. The commission did a study in 1975, but the study they did more or less reinforced the present system, and a study which is done by a body such as the commission would seem to be biased. I mean, they would have a vested interest in trying to show that their system is the best system. So I'd like to recommend that first an education program be started out here to inform the people of what the heck's going on with limited entry. And second, that if no solutions come out of these meetings, that the legislature set up some type of advisory group or standing committee and look into some of the solutions pretty deeply and see what we can come up with. That's all I got. Yeah.
Thank you, Jeff. Very good.
Yeah, I'd like to ask everybody here a question in terms of what Jeff has said. And I think that this is something that was thought of in 1973, and it keeps to be a problem. That there is this other system that you possibly could go to, that he described, and that is no value on permits, and if anybody who wants to be a future fisherman has got to go apply to the state to get a license. And I, most people seem to think that you could not legally retain the right of someone to give their license to their child, that they'd have to go back to the state. Everybody sends their license back to the state when they're done. So you can't give it to one of your kids. And I guess my question is to people, I'd like to hear people's opinion about, if that is true, would you rather have that kind of system, even though you couldn't give it to your kid, and your kid would have to go apply with everybody else to the state, and he may or may not get one, at least we'd get rid of the system where we had a value on permits. There'd be no value on permits. So this is, there's going to be this trade-off. We're going to lose this right to give a permit to our kid, but we're going to get rid of the value on the permit. And I'd just like to hear different people's opinion if the, if they, that system would still make sense to them.
While you're chewing on that, why don't we just take a five-minute break? We've been sitting here for quite a while. We're just going to stretch. I don't know. I've got about 25 to 4.
There's about 5 minutes. That is just a system. And every person sitting and at the time, a lot of people, I think most people value, tried to decide in the legislature, was, I don't know, we've got nightmares for this now. What do you think this new commission will be like? It's going to be a nightmare for everybody. Every time you see a nightmare, you know, I've been out there, I've got this whole nightmare. You got straight
in. Oh, yeah. How much do you have?
It's an ongoing, you know, I mean, everybody said, chance, you know.
Well, you pay good money. You get these other things. They trust,
which is proven true. It is an outrage.
He gave you the whole work.
He set up the zoo.
The bottom of it was
this, but he gave you the money year after year after year after year. You know, that, but me, and it's a bottom thing. That's, in the opinion, people are willing to put up with having to go.
Bearing on that might be good at right now, but I ordered a new bearing.
But still, if you're way the hell above your optimal number, yeah, well, that's
where it looks like we're headed.
That's not the spot for you. That is not the...
remember one time there was the law was such that you had to go to a security to buy your
license. The PNA bill, 1962, 1964.
Yeah, one fish just made a lot of money.
Yeah, right. It was unconstitutional. It's some sort of a burden on the outsiders. It compels them to fly up here in order to license. It's a burden on any state company.
But they have the law in the law. They have the law in the law.
I'm not sure. I've got a question there.
I don't know why I like it.